From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. The Alaska Board of Fish takes up the question of hatchery salmon. A new video campaign shows the trickle-down effect of the seafood tariff and how tariffs hurt not just fisheries-related jobs. Remember that confused sea lion wandering around Sitka a while back? Well, it seems the sea lion is doing just fine now. We know this because biologists attached a satellite tag to its flipper before releasing it. And finally, a previously unknown marine invasive species is found in Ketchikan. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries agenda was packed with hatchery issues on Tuesday. Board members considered putting some issues on future agendas, but they also held a public forum on the broader state of hatcheries, following a lengthy report from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game staff. As KBBI's Aaron Bolton reports, some board members expressed interest in taking a wait-and-see approach when it comes to increasing hatchery production.
The board spent about 4 hours on hatcheries, beginning with a long report from Fish and Game Chief Fisheries Scientist Bill Templin. Templin addressed a plethora of hatchery issues, namely hatchery straying and ocean carrying capacity. The department is currently conducting an extensive study on hatchery strays in Prince William Sound in southeast Alaska, but when it comes to the volume of salmon the North Pacific Ocean can support, Templin explained that the scientific community is far from providing a comprehensive answer.
Because now we're not talking about just a larger area, but we're talking about the entire North Pacific. As has been mentioned, one of our Russian colleagues likens it to catching a moonbeam in a jar.
The department's Hatchery Wild Research Project is due to release the first round of several genetic reports in the coming months, which will inform the board's discussion on whether hatchery fish that spawn with wild stocks reduce their productivity. Templin also noted that some hatchery programs could be brought more closely in line with department policies. He gave a few recommendations for Prince William Sound programs, which have drawn an increasing amount of scrutiny after hatchery fish from the area were found in lower Cook Inlet streams.
Recommended actions that can be taken immediately include completing the identification of significant and unique stocks and wild stock sanctuaries, implementing an annual survey to index stray rates in wild streams, and completing the work that has already begun on population structure and productivity through the Alaska Hatchery Research Program.
Board members also held a public hatchery forum, which turned into an hour-long listening session filled with comments from hatchery supporters, critics, and those in between. However, board members reserved most of their comments for when the board considered two agenda change requests related to hatchery production. The first mirrors a previous request to prevent the Valdez Fisheries Development Association from increasing the egg take at its Solomon Gulch hatchery by 20 million. The board shot down that request. Board member Israel Payton didn't support the proposal, but he did question increases in production more broadly.
Looking at that graph, it looks like slowly over the years, the relationship of hatchery caught fish and wild stock fish and harvest rates is getting closer. They're both large, but when do we say that a hatchery fish, should we stop? Is it when we're catching 51% hatchery fish? So I think a lot of people are just concerned about that, you know, taking a breath and not introducing more.
Member Orville Huntington echoed Payton. According to Fish and Game staff, the total permitted egg take across the state has increased by nearly 1 billion eggs since 2000. And hatchery fish accounted for 21% of the total commercial catch in 2017. Those numbers were called into question by another request calling for the board to reduce the total statewide egg take to 1.2 billion. Chairman Reed Morisky spoke in favor of considering the proposal.
This ACR is not talking about eliminating hatcheries. It's talking about capping capacity. And as the department indicated, there's more science that needs to be done, and it's uncertain when or how that might occur. and I think we should take a pause.
Mariski and Huntington were the only board members to vote in favor of putting the proposal on a future agenda. The board's discussion on hatchery issues is set to continue in March, when the full board will meet as the hatchery committee for the first time. The board is set to focus on more regional hatchery issues in the coming years. I'm Aaron Bolton, reporting in Homer.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Trade tariffs hurt jobs. A new video campaign, Seafood See Jobs, is taking its message on trade to the people who make policy decisions. It's a project launched by the National Fisheries Institute to show the trickle-down effect of the 25% tariffs on U.S. seafood on Trump's trade war on China. Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch has more.
We're showing real people in real U.S. cities whose jobs really rely on seafood trade. So whether it's a fisherman or a processor, a restaurant server, a trucker, the seafood community really has kind of diverse impacts that not everyone knows about.
Lindsay Fowler is NFI Communications Manager. She's traveled the country since August, capturing the faces and places of seafood jobs.
It's not just the people that are actually on the water. It's a lot further down the supply chain where you see impacts. It's people processing fish, trucking, cold storage, sales and procurement, serving seafood in restaurants, and a lot of those jobs are in the heartland.
34 videos have been produced so far. The target audience is policymakers and key opinion leaders on trade in Washington, D.C.
You know, inside the Beltway, there are really segments of people that are listened to by the administration, and we want to make sure they're talking about seafood when they talk about industries that are hurt by tariffs.
A 25% tariff on U.S. seafood going to China began in September. Another on seafood exports from China to the U.S. is set to hit in January.
It takes our members somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 15 weeks to put in an order to China and get it here. So our members are operating under that 25% tariff, and it has a big impact.
See the Seafood See Jobs videos at aboutseafood.com.
That was Lainey Welch from Alaska Fish Radio.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
And now to that wandering sea lion. Marine mammal experts say the sea lion that came ashore in Sitka about a month ago is alive and well. After biologists sedated the animal and returned it to sea, scientists with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the Alaska Marine Mammal Stranding Network attached a satellite tag to the sea lion's front right flipper to keep track of it. Volunteers with both agencies issued a joint statement to public radio KCAW saying that the sea lion seems to be exhibiting normal behavior. While the sea lion seemed all confused on land, once it hit the water, it was in its element and began to swim and swim and swim. Experts had not received new information from the tag for several days and were beginning to worry. But apparently the satellite tag went silent because the sea lion was at sea, traveling northwest from Sitka to Kayak Island near Cordova. That's a total travel distance of 337 nautical miles. With the help of area volunteers, a team of researchers has identified a previously unknown invasive species in Ketchikan. The bryozoan has never been seen this far north before. Alaska Sea Grant's Marine Advisory Agent in Ketchikan, Gary Freitag, was a member of the scientific team. Layla Carey has more.
Bugula neritina is a tiny, moss-like invertebrate made up of purplish, skinny branches. The filter feeder was among many creatures found growing on several hundred special panels that had been submerged in harbors around Ketchikan. Unlike the other organisms found, though, Bugula narrytina had not been seen before in southeast Alaska. The bryozoan became the subject of a peer-reviewed article published recently in the academic journal Bioinvasions Records, and Freitag was one of the authors. Invasive species are always a concern and something to keep an eye on. They can crowd out local species and take over habitat. But Freitag says, for the moment, the newly identified species and other invasive marine species are not a huge problem in the Ketchikan area. They could become a problem later.
Invasive species have a habit of laying dormant for long periods of time once they're introduced to an area, but when the conditions get perfect, they can expand very rapidly. It's very common for them to do that.
And a changing climate could prompt such an expansion. The new marine invasive species now joins others that already were known to be in southeast Alaska. Those are all tunicates or sea squirts. A different kind of invasive species Freitag has been watching for is the European green crab.
We still have not found one here. We hopefully will never find them, but that's another species that we don't think can propagate here because the temperature is just a little bit too cool, but 1 degree might be enough to cause an issue.
Freitag says invasive species compete with indigenous species for resources or even eat indigenous species. And there often is a lack of predators to help control those introduced organisms.
Things are used to eating certain things, and they go after those. And when they see something new that's not from this area, they tend to ignore it.
Invasive marine species often are brought in by boats traveling up and down the coast. Freitag says cleaning a boat's hull and all the nooks and crannies creatures can hide in would help stop or at least slow the spread of invasive organisms. It's important to know what's out there, which makes the scientific study so valuable. Freitag says the research team was in Ketchikan as part of a larger study of marine organisms.
And they were looking at the diversification of organisms, which is what kinds of organisms, how many of the different species occur at different latitudes. So this was a National Science Foundation project that spanned over latitude, and they went from Panama to Mexico to California to Alaska.
Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from Aaron Bolton at KBBI in Homer, Enrique Perez de la Rosa at KCAW in Sitka, Layla Carey at KRBD in Ketchikan, and from Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio, who also had assistance from seafoodnews.com. As always, a big thank you to everyone who makes this program possible each week, including our listeners, that's you, and the stations that air the program. For you fishermen, be safe. We want you to come back, and so does your family. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.